Well, here we are, the last Sunday in December, and it seems like we're going to be turning a page very soon. But I do have an opening story for you, and it was about this woman who was invited to a wedding, and she realized she did not have a gift for the wedding. And then she thought to herself, aha, I've got this figured out. I have that silver tray that was given to me from my wedding that was monogrammed for me. And I'm going to take that to a silversmith and have him remove that monogram and just replace it with the monogram of the bride-to-be. And voila, I have a wedding gift. So she took it off to the silversmith, and she said, I want you to remove this monogram and replace it with this monogram for the bride whose wedding it is. And the silversmith studied the tray very carefully, and then he shook his head and he said, you know, I'm really sorry, lady, but this is something that could only be done a certain number of times. We're going to get into that a little bit more later in the talk, the whole idea of regifting. But our talk title today is Five Golden Rings. Did I tee that up? Okay. And you probably know that this phrase is taken from the Christmas song, The 12 Days of Christmas, which was written way back late in the 16th century. And I actually had thought of challenging Rob to learn the song and play it for the service today, and I just didn't have the heart to do so. And then I thought, well, instead of doing that, I'm going to bring a recording in and play the song before my talk. And I realized that I didn't want to do that either. And there's a reason for that, and I really don't want to offend anybody, but personally, I find this to be one of the more annoying Christmas songs out there. It ranks right up there with Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, which I suppose some of you probably really enjoy and like a lot, too. But you think about the lyrics of the song, and they're crazy. I mean, look at the gift list that's involved. 12 drummers drumming, 11 pipers piping, 10 lords a-leaping, 9 ladies dancing. Well, okay, I really kind of do like that one, I have to admit. But there's probably the reason why there is so much speculation out there about what is the true meaning of the song. What are the lyrics really saying? And there's all sorts of theories that have been set forth trying to explain this shopping list that somebody is gifting to somebody else. I mean, these things that you can't go to the mall and buy, and I don't even think you could get them on Amazon. And one of the more popular theories is that the song is, in fact, a code that served as a catechism for persecuted Catholics early on. And so the partridge in the pear tree is supposed to represent Jesus, and Jesus is also represented by the phrase, my true love, and two turtle doves. Well, that represents the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian scriptures, and on it goes all the way up through 12 catechismal lessons. That's probably a myth. But notwithstanding that, there is some symbolism in the song. So, for example, partridges and pear trees were kind of the emblem of fertility during the time of the Renaissance. And geese and swans were reviewed as intermediaries between the earth and heaven, and therefore between God and humankind. And the reference in the song to the five golden rings, that has nothing to do with jewelry. It's actually a reference to a ring-necked pheasant that was around at that time. But I wanted to go down this path of the 12 days of Christmas with you because I really wanted to stress something and to emphasize something that I think is very important for us to understand and to regard as something that is truly significant, and that is Christmas is not over. Christmas on this day is not something that is going to occur 360 days from now. We are truly immersed in Christmas right now, right smack dab in the middle of it. And so what I want you to come away with is the realization that Christmas is a process. You know, this whole notion of 12 days of Christmas, that existed long before the song ever was written. And Christians would celebrate 12 days of Christmas throughout the entire world in one long giant festival. And on the 12th day, the most significant day, they had something that was called the 12th Night Festival. And they built all kinds of symbolism into this. And one of the more fascinating ones that I discovered when I was researching this is on that 12th day, during that 12th Night Festival, peasants, the poor, the peasants, were regarded and treated and esteemed as royalty. And they were waited on and they were served by the lords and the dukes and the earls in their local communities. And I just thought, wow, that is something that's so incredibly powerful. And then later on, the Catholic Church would come around and they would kind of add a day, the 13th day, as kind of the bridge between Christmas time and non-Christmas time. And that was the Feast of the Magi, the Feast of the Three Kings, the Feast of the Epiphany. Epiphany. I absolutely am intrigued by that word. I think it's such a significant word, such a powerful word, because what an epiphany is a realization. It's an aha moment that people have. And so you might hear somebody say, I had an epiphany, or he had an epiphany, or she had an epiphany. And it was a change of heart, a change of a realization that involved letting go of something that just did not make any sense any longer in order to make room for a new discovery in your life. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, if that's not unity, then nothing is. And so, like Christmas, unity is a process. It's the process, the ongoing process of letting go of those old, worn out, tired views and beliefs that no longer serve you, that no longer make sense, in order to make room for newness, a new awareness. And when this takes place, it has applicability, not just on a theological level, but on an incredibly practical level for us each and every day of our lives. And every time that we engage in, every time that we embrace this process, we come away with a new, greatened, heightened awareness of who and what we are. Because every time we engage in that process, we are really giving birth again to the Christ within. And so it's possible to view this on a multitude of different areas and a multitude of different planes. You could look at it from an evolutionary perspective. And that what is happening is that we as a species are rising up and becoming more than we were before. You could look at it from a psychological perspective, that we're moving from a place of having a lot of hang-ups to fewer hang-ups so that we can enjoy them and be more fulfilled in our everyday lives. You could even take it down to lower common denominators, that we grow in an awareness of what it means to be a father, what it really means to be a mother, what really is involved in being somebody's friend. And of course, we could look at it from a very spiritual perspective. in which it would translate out to becoming something that there's such an elevation of our humanity that we rise and come closer, ever closer to become nearer, ever closer to approximating the divinity that resides in each and every one of us. Regardless of how you may view the process, the really important thing that I want to emphasize here is that it is significant and valuable for you to engage in this process at least sometimes, at least occasionally, if not consistently and not regularly. Our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, who really was a genius of a man, insisted constantly, "I reserve the right to change my mind." Because he had this awareness within him that where he was at this given point, any given point in his life was okay, but he had to be open and receptive to letting it go and moving on to something even more powerful, more beautiful that he had yet to realize. In one of the early fathers of our country, Thomas Jefferson, once suggested that it probably would be a really healthy thing if there was a revolution every 200 years. So on the political scale, he had the realization that newness was important. That new life and letting go of the way things have always been done is something that's of value. And so if we don't engage in this Christmas process, we don't grow. What happens is that we grow stale. What happens is that we grow old. And so these things that I'm talking about today are represented in the story about the Magi that is found in the Gospel of Matthew. And it's the story also of the three kings. And we learn from the story that the kings embarked upon a journey. They didn't just pop themselves in the car and drive over to the stable to visit Jesus. Okay? This was a real journey that took them across fields and across the desert. And they traveled at night because they were following the star in the sky that would lead them to the newborn. And when they arrived, they paid homage to this newborn Christ reality in the world. There are all kinds of powerful metaphysics in this story. For goodness sakes, they were kings. Imagine what they had to let go of in order to have the openness, the receptivity to embark upon such a journey with the possibility of discovering something more immense, more profound, greater than their own kingship. And to do this, they had to follow the light through the darkness. What a powerful lesson this is for us. You know, when we go to that place of darkness, we have that tendency to dwell there for a while, to mope, to complain. We don't understand that the darkness is a key. It's a doorway for us to grow. It's a place for us to light a candle ourselves or to seek the light in order that we can move forward. And remember, whenever we're talking about the metaphysics of a story, you are all of the characters in this story. So you are the three kings who, through their own humility, were able to put aside the royalty. And in like manner, you are able to put on your own persona, your own sense of entitlement in this world, and grow in humility in a way which will allow you to make the journey. Aren't we called to do this same thing? Aren't we called to journey to discover the newborn birthing of the Christ wherever we go, whatever we do, and in every relationship that we have? Aren't we called to do this as we engage with one another, as brothers and sisters, as parents, as children, or whatever? And most significantly of all, are we not called to make the journey, putting aside our beliefs, putting aside all of those images that we have about ourselves, be they positive or negative, in order to make the journey and discover the Christ that resides deep within each and every one of us? I defy anybody to make such a journey and come away not feeling that truly this is an incredibly merry Christmas. Not just on December 25th, but throughout the 12 days of Christmas and beyond that. We are seeking our own epiphanies. There's something more to that story about the three kings that I want to talk about, and that is that they came bearing gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And all of those have metaphysical interpretations that I don't want to go into right now, because I just want to talk about the whole idea of gifts and gift-giving and re-gifting. I want to come back to that. If you have ever given a gift to anybody that wasn't just a here, there you go, but represented a true feeling of giving on your part, then you had that feeling of reward, that feeling of satisfaction, that what you had really given to the other person was a part of yourself, a part of who you are. And if you have ever received a gift from somebody who was giving it in that same spirit, you couldn't help but feel the specialness that was involved and the sharing that was involved. Because any gift that is truly given from the heart and not out of a sense of obligation, any gift that really comes from the heart exercises the heart and it strengthens the heart. But any gift that is just done out of a sense of, well, I guess I got to do this, or a sense of obligation, has the opposite effect. It actually hardens your heart and leaves you a little bit colder. And so I want to talk now also about the concept of regifting. We hear the concept of regifting and we say, oh, regifting is a terrible thing. I mean, there's no thought, there's no feeling into it. You're just basically taking something that you didn't need, you didn't want, and store it maybe on a shelf, maybe for years. And then you hand it over to somebody else and that gets something out of the way. And yeah, there is that element about regifting. There's no question about it. There was once an entire Seinfeld episode on the whole embarrassing experiences that are wrapped around regifting. And I share with you openly that I once gave my daughter a gift that I had forgotten she had given to me a couple of years before that. So there wasn't that warm, fuzzy feeling that I've been working to describe here, especially when she said, Dad, you are such a jerk. But let's look at it from a broader perspective. Let's look at it from a spiritual perspective. Because I really think that regifting gets a very, very bad rap. So we start with the basics. There is only one source in the universe, in our lives. And that source is God the good. That source is what only wants what is the highest and the greatest best for each and every one of us. And if we think about it for a moment, there is absolutely nothing that we are, there is absolutely nothing that we have that isn't from God, that isn't of God. And so it really is impossible ever to give a gift without that gift being something that was re-gifted. And when I spoke earlier about the whole concept of giving a gift that is heartfelt, you know, what we are doing is sharing a part of ourselves. We are sharing part of the most divine gift ever possible, our very lives. And what moves it from being something that's really not so great to something that is powerful and wonderful is a consciousness, is an awareness. Again, it's the activation of our hearts when we give it to somebody else. So that when we give somebody a kiss as a gift and it represents the love that we have, it's because we are the gift of love itself. When we offer somebody a simple gift of a smile, we are re-gifting the reality that we share a common oneness with one another, that everybody is incredibly significant. Everybody is incredibly important. Why? Because we are all the Christ. And so every single exchange is re-gifting, and that doesn't minimize it. That maximizes it. Because what eventually happens is a real manifestation of the Christ living in the world in some very practical way. And if we ever needed it, we need it in the world and in the country in which we live today. And I feel a little bit like I'm preaching to the choir, because everything that I'm talking about now, the genuineness that is involved and is stemming from the heart, you know, you guys have taught me this lesson by virtue of who you are and what kind of a church family you have been and you have become. But still, it's important for us to bring into mind that Christmas is a process. So again, our talk title today is 5 Golden Rings. A minister likes that. And if people could arbitrarily go and assign meaning to what those 12 days of Christmas represent, then I have absolutely no qualms about taking similar license. And maybe we can view those 5 golden rings that is our talk topic today and view them from a unity perspective. And let's allow those 5 golden rings to stand for the 5 unity principles. So the first ring really represents that one power, that one source that is active in the universe and in our lives, God the good, always looking to grace us, always willing to accept us where we are and challenge us to move forward. And that second ring, that represents the Christ reality that abides in each and every one of us, that is together with that first source and is in communion with that first prime source. And the third ring then could represent our awareness, our understanding that every thought is a prayer and that we are empowered to tap into divine substance in a way that we can really bring those things into the world in a very real, true sense. And the fourth ring could represent that we do this through the power of prayer. That through our denials we let go, and through our affirmations we welcome in newness into our lives. And the fifth ring involves what those three kings did. They walked the walk. They did whatever was necessary. They took whatever actions were necessary, because the first four rings in and of themselves are lacking something if we don't live them, if we don't play them out at least once in a while, but ideally every single day in our lives. And so what that fifth golden ring really represents is our positive, active affirmation. It is our amen. It is our yes to engaging in this incredibly beautiful Christmas process. And so with that, I invite you, please join me in taking this into prayer and meditation.